Theater. To be or not to be. Theater. The play's the thing.
Dudes.
Friends.
Yeah.
Dudes.
Yeah,
dudes.
What's up?
Hi.
Dudes, gals.
Hi.
French people?
French people.
We've been kicking it a lot recently, which I appreciate. Went and saw a movie, and then we hung out at Scott's and watched what we're talking about today. So we're full of beans as a group.
Uh-huh.
Right, but Bailey now. And I hate beans.
I hate beans. I don't eat
they
beans.
They hate
it's
beans.
The one food I don't eat.
And if you're listening, write in and tell them why they're wrong. Yeah.
They're little poop sacks.
Yeah, they're gross.
Little skin
they're
sacks.
Texturally offensive.
Ah, so good.
Yeah,
beans.
Sounds awful.
I'm just going to send you videos of me eating just beans.
And canned green beans over fresh green beans. Fight me.
Everyone is turned off.
A lot of people are going to fight you, CJ. A lot of people are going to fight you on that.
So we went and saw Guardians of the Galaxy the other night, the third one.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a whole episode on the MCU as theater. We did a whole episode on it like two seasons ago, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where would it rank for you since we ranked all of the MCU? Like, is it pretty low? Is it mid? Like, where is it ranking for you? Do you know? Have you thought about it?
I am more of a Guardians fan of all three of them than you are, Bailey. I know. I would definitely rank this in the top half.
Yeah.
I would really have to think and process and see what happens next. Like, it's hard for me to put them in place until the next one comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the next one? What's next? Well, there's next Secret Wars.
Yeah, but I think there's one before then, right? I don't know.
Anyway, but yeah.
It would be somewhere, I think, somewhere in the middle for me. I need to watch it again. I saw that whole movie, but I don't know that I could tell you everything that happened.
It's because you were wasted.
No, I wasn't.
It was big, too.
You were pretty wasted.
I was just as wasted as you guys were. But I also, like, I'm sorry. I just do not care for Chris Pratt. I just don't.
No, I don't either.
Every time I was supposed to care about him, I was like, fuck that guy. So,
yeah.
What about you, Bailey?
No, I felt the same. I feel the same way about Chris Pratt. I just don't care about Chris Pratt. I don't like the first one. I think it's fine. It ranks really low for me. The second one ranks even lower for me. Like, I'm sort of like, meh. And I know that's not the popular opinion, but those just aren't my movies. Mm-hmm. I was so surprised by this one. I had a blast. The James Gunn of it all was just very fun. And I can always dig, like, a, you know, Save the Animals storyline.
Sure.
Plus, there's a Florence and the Machine song in it.
Have you seen the video of her watching the movie?
Yes, it's insane.
It's amazing.
She's crying. She's just
so good.
It's so good. It's so good.
We enjoyed ourselves. I'm ranking it sort of in the same. I haven't put it into my ranking yet, but I'm sort of putting it in the same area as Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania for different reasons. I enjoyed them both thoroughly for very, very different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I like them enough that I think they'll live in the top half, like you say, Scott. They won't break my top 10, obviously. But this one was fun. It's a good time. It will rank higher than the other two for me. And then we got together and we watched this movie that we're talking about today.
Yes.
If you can call it a movie. I call it theater. I call it true theater today. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. Because welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Bertram.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And while I pull up my script, I'm going to... Okay.
Speaking of scripts.
And each week, we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses.
Hmm.
Yeah?
Yes.
This week is a Bailey's pick because we're in the midst of a mini-series within a mini-series that's been going on for two whole seasons, and I'm so glad that this is the second-to-last part of this mini-series. We've been covering NBC's live musicals, live TV musicals, and I decided I really wanted to talk about one of the Fox live musicals because this one, I think, is the best version of all of these things, besides the very last one, which is an even better version, only because it's pure concert style, right? It's more of like a concert stadium version of it, which is Jesus Christ Superstar. We'll get there later. But today, we're talking about Fox's Grease Live.
Mm-hmm. It's the word.
You guys are like, yeah.
The word.
Grease is the word.
Is this our fourth or fifth one?
I think it's our fifth. We did Sound of Music.
Peter Pan. Hairspray.
And there was one more.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, that's embarrassing. There had to be.
Oh, shit. The Wiz.
Yes.
Oh, the Wiz.
Which so far is the best one.
I thought we all agreed Hairspray was pretty good.
That's true. Hairspray has it. You're right. I thought the best shot one was the Wiz.
Yes.
Like it looked the best.
Because they kept it.
Hairspray looks like a soap opera. Yeah. This one, though, I would argue, sort of takes all of that even to another level in terms of production. And so we'll get into that. But I'm excited to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys for putting up with this miniseries. I know it's a long one.
Oh, I love it.
It's fun, though.
Uh-huh.
But I would argue we had ribs and we watched it.
We had ribs.
And we had a blast. We did have fun watching it.
We had cake.
And cake. And we got to talk about the old one and our times. We've all been in it at some point. And so it's just like, it's fun to talk about. CJ?
Yes?
Will you do me a favor?
What?
Will you break it down so we understand now?
Yes.
Please? Thanks.
CJ's breakdown.
Squeaky clean Sandy meets moody greaser hunk Danny over the summer, and they fall in love the way high school students do.
Yeah.
Sandy transfers to Rydell High, Danny's high school, and they are unexpectedly reunited as seemingly clique opposites in a time when going against societal norms is strictly prohibited, especially if you're a woman. Will they work it out? Absolutely no one can guess.
Who cares? Exactly. And as you say, it's a bit of a Romeo and Juliet type story, if you will.
Except nobody dies.
no one dies, but that's true. But,
it's what it needs.
True.
Nobody
also
needs
like,
to die.
They don't both die at the end of West Side Story.
No,
it's just a variation on the story. They're on two opposite sides, and they're fighting against it. It's less RNG.
But it's also that super young love.
Exactly.
That crazy love. Yeah, sorry.
No, that's exactly. No, exactly. I'm with you completely. That's exactly what it is. It's that it's like what you said is what sparked this is as high schoolers do.
Mm-hmm.
What?
As they are wont to do.
As was the custom of the day.
As was the custom of the day. And this is tackling that. And I would love to get your contexts for Grease itself. I really love this musical, and I always stand up for it, even though I understand the problems that are surrounding it. I've heard enough sort of takes on it that made me see it in different lights that I always kind of stand up for this musical. I really love it. I really love the movie. I played Rump, who is not in the movie. He's just one of the T-Birds. He's replaced with Putsy.
Yeah,
something like that. I did that in high school, loved it, had a blast with it. But that's my context. CJ, what is your Grease context?
I mean, I saw the movie a million billion times, and then when I was in like junior high school, there was a massive resurgence of Grease 2. And I watched that a million times randomly.
Like, ironically? Or, like,
no,
really
I think
it
was because the boys in my class thought it was so funny. What's the one? We're gonna score tonight. Like, the guys
sang
that song.
Sure, we used
to go over to Michael Chavez's house and watch it.
The funniest one is, let's do it
for our country.
The red, white, and the blue. Yeah. The movie rules.
And then
you're
think
in the bomb shelter. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah,
I think I've seen it live once, but I know I mentioned while we were watching it, the closest I ever got to actually being in Greece was my senior year in college. The dean of musical theater decided our main stage musical would be Bye Bye Birdie. And I was called back for that, but I did not get cast.
Aww.
So, you didn't want to.
That's a bad show.
No, it's just a movie I've seen a million billion times. I've seen it live at least once, but that's it. What about you, Scott?
Scott?
I remember being very young and seeing the movie in the theater. Like, cool. I was like a young kid. And then I remember getting the double vinyl soundtrack album. It was two records.
That's fun.
And I played that fucking thing all the time, nonstop, for years and years. I did it in college. I played Sonny Lattieri, who is the one greaser who doesn't get a solo. But it was still a named character, and I had fun doing it. And we did it with the main cast was all college folks and a few professional actors as the older people. And then we did it with a chorus of 50 high school kids. Yeah, dude. And it was...
We go together.
What a fucking production. Jesus.
You could smell the hormones from like an hour away. Like it was just horny. It was just a horny time. So, but I had a blast and remember it fondly. And, I think I'm like you, Bailey. There's a sentimentality for it. Like, I'll always kind of defend the musical and defend, especially as you go back and as we get into this conversation, we'll talk about the evolution of the play and the musical and how much it changed and how it's not really what it was anymore.
Correct. Well,
I
feel like this has kind of been an ongoing theme a little bit this season, specifically of the pod, is the idea of something being irresponsibly consumed.
Sure.
And then, especially with this one, I think even more so than maybe even Phantom, being irresponsibly produced.
Right.
So that was something that hit me because Bailey, you've spoken up for Grease for a long time, but I've also had other people say like, no, it's a really feminist musical. And I'm like, what?
And we can get deeper into that concept, but I don't know that the original intention was very feminist.
Oh.
But I don't know.
Maybe not feminist specifically.
Correct. I don't know that they were meaning for it to be, but it's talking about a time and an age group and is defending all of them. It's defending all of them in a way. And we'll get to the ending, but the take most people have is like, well, it's fucked up that she changes for all of them. That's messed up. Like,
sure.
That she has to like be sexy and be this certain way to like be liked by them and stuff. And that's how I think it's produced. That's how it's sort of, it is that kind of two-dimensional thing. The way I choose to view it, and I think how a lot of people would prefer to view it, especially who love it, is no, it's this age group. It's these teens rebelling against what they're being told they're going to have to do, which is, you leave school and you have a child and you, for the women especially, and then you're a wife the rest of your life, which is why Betty Rizzo's whole thing is I got to get my kicks while I got them because they just keep telling me I'm going to have to go become a wife. So like, I guess I just, I got to fuck everybody until that happens. And so the take is that Sandy at the end chooses, I'm not going to do what my parents have told me I have to do. I want to really be somebody and I want to break out of the mold and I want to be sexual and I want to smoke cigarettes and I want to fuck my boyfriend, but I've been told I'm not allowed to because I have to be pure for men or for whatever it may be. And I choose to view it that way. I think that's interesting. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I think that message resonates. I mean, you think, I mean, Grease has always been popular, right? Because now they're talking about, like, millennials are like the least married and least familied up people. None of us are buying houses. We're the death of the guest bedroom because none of us own property anymore.
Right, yeah, and, right.
You know, and now all the boomers and the older people are worried about it. So it's a time-honored tradition of the younger generation being pissed off at the older generation and trying to rebel.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, that's just to circle back to your point, Bailey, I think that the most important song in the show is Sandra D. Look at me, I'm Sandra D. That's the criticism. They're mocking her for being
a good girl.
Not just a good girl, but giving in to
what the adults want.
What the adults want, what pop culture wants. They're you know, they're distinctly making fun of that and the pressure.
The norm.
It's like why be normal? You know, I think the best character in the play is Rizzo.
I love Rizzo.
I mean, it's
Rizzo the rat. One.
Yeah, I mean, but she takes no bullshit from moment one. And when she faces the potentiality of being pregnant, she's like, fuck it. I'll do what I got to do. I'll do what I have to do. Mm-hmm. And she's the bravest of them all for sure. And then I think that's what Sandy learns from.
I think you're right. I think that's very true. I think that's also what the whole Frenchie thing is about, like, in some ways. And, like, I mean, of course, that's kind of the opposite because she ends up going back to school and, like, doing it. But we'll get – but it's for herself. It's not for – okay, we'll get there. I want to go back a little bit because we're talking about Grease live today, but there's a big journey –
To get there.
Okay, because as you said, Scott, it's a very different – thing. So Grease as a musical is for the first time is staged in 1971 in Chicago at Kingston Mines, which is a nightclub. Okay, which sounds great. I'm already in. Okay.
Yeah.
And then it did and it was very much like Polish American based. Like, all the kids were kind of Polish-American. It had that bent to it. Kanicki. And yeah, exactly. And that all gets kind of deleted as it grows in popularity. And they take it to Broadway. And Broadway's like, yeah, we're doing away with all that. And they trim a lot of the vulgarity. This thing was really raw. Really on purpose, like way more raw than like Hair or anything, which is we can compare to Hair or Rent, where it's like it's about a time and a people, and there was like no plot really. It's kind of just watching these kids punk out in the time, right? And it was real camp, almost John Waters style kind of stuff, right? And it just grows and grows and grows, and it's a huge hit on Broadway, even with all that kind of stripped down. People are just like in for it, okay. And I think they gave it a little bit more of a plot for Broadway, but not really. Then the movie comes out in 78?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 1978. So it's on Broadway in 72. So 6 years later, it's grown, and they decide, let's make a movie out of it. I don't want to go into all this stuff. There's, like, really interesting castings that could have happened that didn't happen, all this stuff. But you have Olivia Newton-John, you have John Travolta, Jeff Conway, you know, all these dudes, the Taxi, the whole cast of Taxi is on there. And it's sort of like, when they make the movie, they're trying to popularize it a little bit. Like they're trying to make it more of a movie. They're trying to make it have an arc and, you know, and play to the strengths of these stars that they already have. And it blows up. It's a huge film. Everybody loves it. It's the movie we know and love. And it got a lot of love for that, for it being kind of raw and honest and real about stuff. But it's still nothing compared to the original script. Then after that, they produce a new version of it that's closer to the movie. A lot of songs have changed. You know, the order of things has changed. The end of Act One is meant to be, we go together, like da da da, because that's when they all sort of pair up together. And then there's some other song at the end of Act Two. I can't remember what it is. And Better Shake Up doesn't exist. There's a hundred. Well, we can go get to that later. But all these songs don't exist in the original musical. To make it more like the movie, they edit the stage show, and now most people do that script,
mm-hmm. right?
So you
that's
can
what
choose
everybody
different
knows.
Songs,
that's
right?
What
that's what people
tickets.
Know
yeah.
exactly. And I think a lot of people when they, I think you get options. Like you can choose different versions of the script. You can get a different. It's like when I was gonna direct Three Penny Opera before COVID hit, they sent me 15 different translations because they're like, "Well, which one do you want?" And I was like, "Oh fuck!" But they were all so different from each other, like full plots different from each other. Where you're just like, "Okay, this one has cursing. This one doesn't. I'm gonna do the cursing one." Right? This was similar. Where they're pretty different enough that if you're like someone, I really want to focus in on the vulgarity, maybe you'd choose the original mm-hmm. script. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all this to say, it's if you're going to produce it nowadays, you're most likely going to end up with the more tame movie-esque version, but there are some song differences here and there. And this Grease Live, we all kind of agreed, is like a weird hybrid of all of those things.
Yeah.
Like it's not just a hybrid of the movie and the final draft of the script. It's like, it kind of goes back to the original and it kind of goes back. It's a weird amalgamation.
It's a weird amalgamation of how, yeah, yeah.
But then like there's it. A lot of like modern day stardom in it too, 100%. Which makes it its own now
thing. And
then
thing they write
also.
New songs, which yep. we'll talk yeah. about. Yeah. I'm angry about. Yeah. And the movie, you brought this up, Scott, too, but and we'll get to this too, but there are songs in the movie that feel even too contemporary for the time because right. they were written for the movie in the late 70s.
Right.
Right. And whereas the original musical was and they're kind of poppy and what disco sounding, whereas the original was meaning to sound very 50s drive-in jukebox.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. and yeah, cause that was the other thing that I'd read that there was this challenge of the team that was producing the soundtrack for the movie. And you have that right. opening number, which is, a 50s singer singing a very distinctly 70s disco vibe song. Grease is the Word doesn't sound 50s at all. Like no, if you were no. to listen to it and, you know, same with, you know, You're the One That I Want and
the drive-in song you mentioned too.
Yeah. 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 And those were all made to be singles. They wanted them to be singles and help sell the soundtrack and, generate more money, and there's nothing wrong with that except for sure. when it takes you out. And since most people hadn't seen Grease or experienced Grease before the movie, it doesn't. It works perfectly.
It's just part
as
of
a
Grease.
Film.
Yeah.
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 And so yeah, and I remember when I did it in college, like that it was a little jarring that we were doing the original version and that mm-hmm. these other songs were missing and that there were these new songs that you had to convince people of, so to speak.
Yeah. And it's definitely more sexual. And we talked a lot about word changes. Grease Lightning, specifically has a lot of word changes. There's, it's a real dragon wagon is what it says now, but it was originally pussy wagon. And, the other one
my
is
word.
My word.
The Chixel Scream, they say now, but it used to be
the Chixel Cream.
The yeah. Cream. but that's just to show you the difference between the original and what it became. Yeah.
Creaming over a car. I don't know many women that are like, ooh, that car, I'm wet, because I know I'm not like that, but
I
you
am.
Know.
Nothing at all. Yeah, okay, so. I want to focus in on Grease Live specifically. Mm-hmm. I watched it when it happened, when it aired.
Mm.
I don't remember why. I feel like I was somewhere where it was just on, or I didn't like plan on it. It wasn't like something I had in my calendar, right?
Right
but it
right.
it popped up and we put it on, and right away I was sold because I'm a huge Jessie J fan.
Mm.
And so we set the scene. Jessie J pops out after the opening scene where they're they're on the beach and they do the whole thing and the acting's a little rough and you're kind of like, wait, oh, is this going to be bad? Is this going to be really bad? It's Aaron Tveit and Vanessa Hudgens, or fuck, not Vanessa, Julianne Hough.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, okay, this is rough. Are we getting there? We're going to get there. And then it goes, and you're like, oh shit. And Jesse J pops out, looking fly, sings the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And it introduces you to the whole world. Every set that we're going to be on, every bit of audience that's there. And it's
quite a bit of fucking camera work there, too.
Tons of it.
And choreography, just getting people in and out and all that. It was impressive.
Really impressive. The sound design we noticed was a little muted. And I don't know if that was like the volume of the TV or what at the beginning, but then as we went, we were like, oh no, it's just bad. It's just poorly mixed.
Right? Yeah.
But she still sounded great, but you could see her like taking her headphones out and like her earpiece out and being like, I can't hear the music, so I'm just going to sing my face off.
Right.
And she kills it.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
She was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she did great.
And the other sort of cameo, well, I mean, there's a million cameos in this, but the other sort of like stunt casting that we're just going to throw something in there was Boys to Men as the beauty school dropout angel. Yeah, the angel, the dream angel, I think is what most people call it.
Yeah.
And they just come out and they just do some 90s riff harmonies. And I'm just like, yeah. Great.
It was great. They were fucking robbed. They deserve so much more and so much better than just being the best part of Grease Live. Like,
right.
No, they're on a whole new... They're, like, touring right now. So they're
no,
on a
I know.
Whole
I'm just
thing.
Talking
People
about what
Boys
happened to them in the 90s.
No, agreed.
Like, how they got fucked over because
agreed.
Of
But
bands.
I would argue this was a bit of a resurge for them. Like, getting put back in the public eye like this, they have been doing really well since then.
Was this the catalyst?
I think
yeah,
I mean,
really?
In the public eye anyway.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
because
that's
they
cool.
Had, they still have a residency in Vegas.
Vegas.
Right.
They do.
Right. Oh my God, let's go, you guys.
We should. Oh my God.
I'll just sit there and giggle the whole time.
They're so good.
So good.
But they have fun and they're really muted. And so is Jesse J. Like, they're just kind of just doing, they're just like, we're very good at this. We're going to do this real quick. And I'm cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, with these live versions of these shows, I'm like, yeah, sure, give me a Boys to Men performance right now. The thing that ruins it mildly is putting a brand new song right before it just to give Frenchie a song, which makes no sense. We don't need it. And they give her this really poppy, like,
I described it as out of
type.
Time. Yeah.
And it felt like now. It felt weird.
After
and then,
you had the great
right
scene with Didi Khan, too.
Yeah,
like,
where I'm like crying.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Didi Khan, who played Frenchie in the original, shows up and is playing the, you know.
The waitress at the diner.
Waitress, Margot, or whatever her name is. And she comes up and she starts the scene with her from the movie. It's directly out of the movie. It's not in any of the shows. And you're just like, oh. I love Didi Khan. I start thinking about Thomas the Tank Engine and all that shit. What show was she on? Benson? Is that
Benson.
What you said,
she was
That's
on
great.
Benson. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I just love her. And I've met her. She's a staple. I believe she's out in Thousand Oaks. I don't know. But I've done theater with her out in Thousand Oaks. And Barry Pearl, who played Duty, one of the cast members, he's also in this. He pops up. So you get some really cool cameos. And those are nostalgic, and I start kind of tearing up. Didi Khan doing the scene, I'm like, oh shit! And then you're thinking, Boys to Men's about to walk out, and it's and they give you this pop song,
that we discussed wasn't necessarily right for that actress's voice.
Correct.
Either.
Also, not correct for her voice, which sucks because you could tell she had a probably a great technical voice, but they were just giving her this really weirdly ranged song where it was really low and really high, and she just wasn't. Yeah,
didn't work.
Tough.
That was Carly Rae Jepsen.
And I
thought she was very good as Frenchie.
She was like, a phenomenal performer. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
And but yeah, that song was just whack. It felt really tacked on. It felt like a last minute thing,
and
so.
It was long too.
Yeah,
it was a long ass song.
Right. No,
yeah, I agree. And I think
that was my one of my thing with this version of it too was there were so many long songs and dance numbers and stuff.
Sure.
The dance numbers made up for themselves because I will say from top to bottom with the show, I loved the fucking choreography. It was
choreography
so
was choreography fun. And yeah.
But there were times where I'm like, boy, that number was really goddamned long. And then when you have this ballad that she does that doesn't quite work and it just keeps going and going and going, it just yeah. it stopped the show dead, I thought.
Right, right. This the song that they wrote, by the way, I just looked it up. It's written by the two guys who wrote Next to Normal.
Oh, Next to Normal, yeah.
Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkey.
Shit.
Which means it's probably outside of this, if I was listening to it in a different context, I'd probably like it, right? I don't really remember it, but that's tough.
Yeah, you know, hey, everybody misses, you know what I mean? Everyone, you know.
And then they add some songs for the band because they got one of the Jonas Brothers to perform in it, Joe Jonas. Because
and that's
Johnny
where they
Casino.
Fucked up. Like it fucked up. Like either
weird.
The sound or
really
the timing
long
fucked up.
Numbers
or
and the
forgot.
Timing fucked up. Yeah, weird. And we're like waiting for Hand Jive, and we're kind of sitting there like, okay, when's Hand Jive? And then like three songs go by we've never heard, and we're like, okay
what's happening? Yeah.
Why are we still here? This could be an hour shorter, apparently. So that was interesting. The price of a 30-second commercial during Grease Live was set between $300,000 and $320,000.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola sponsors it, a company that's never done anything wrong.
Never.
Ever.
Except for the, you know, Nazis.
Sure.
And that was my biggest criticism was, like, they were trying to stuff so much weird stuff in there. Like, it would have been enough
unneeded
if you would have...
Stuff. Yeah.
Unneeded stuff. That it was just, by the end, you were just like... It killed the dramatic arc of the story.
Yeah.
So that by the time you get to the end, you're like, right on, we're at the end. Okay, we go together. Yes.
Yeah.
You know what was something I didn't like, and maybe this is me being really bitchy and nitpicky, was I loved the live studio audience. We've discussed that it needed to happen with some of these other live shows. But it was fucking weird to me that they were sitting in the gym the whole time. And then they kept going back to the gym where it's like, this is a cafeteria scene, but it's in the gym. And there's all these people sitting around watching you the whole time.
Right.
Like, I get what they were doing, but I was like, just put them out in a fucking audience. And we don't need the gym. Do some other room that you can, like... put a bunch of things on as opposed to like, we built this entire fucking high school style gym. Isn't it amazing? Like,
right.
I don't know.
I mean,
that bugged
I
me.
I really loved that. What I read was that they wanted the energy of an audience in every space. And so what's interesting about it is that those audiences aren't seeing any of the rest of the show. They're only seeing what's done in front of them. I mean, there's probably
monitors
or something,
yeah.
But all the everything you're hearing, all the reactions and stuff are from whoever's in that room with them. Mm. And there's only three spaces that get kind of moved around. And so it was probably budgetary why they kept things in the gym when it was But you're right. Like, you're on a studio lot. Go outside for the cafeteria stuff or something. You know, there's a million different ways to handle that. But the part I didn't love about this, though, Siege, is that they put them all in, like, Rydell colors and things, but none of them have any emotion or, like, they're all just sitting there watching.
They kept fucking up the bleacher choreography.
Yeah, and everyone's like, you could tell they'd all be like, we're supposed to clap now. Okay, we're clapping now. And you'd be like, maybe you should have hired actors for this. This is
fucking amateurs.
Yeah. Fucking amateurs. But it's fine. And, you know, we move on from it. I can forgive things like that, I think, sometimes. It was directed by Thomas Kail.
The inventor of the vegetable.
Correct. How'd you know?
Yeah.
It's like
Thank you, Thomas Kail.
Know that the Broccoli's actually invented broccoli and that's
broccoli's
how they got the money
actually,
to make the James Bond films? Okay.
Yeah.
What?
Broccoli, you know the name Broccoli? Like the people who made.
Were they the person that discovered broccoli?
Well,
no,
they bred it.
They bred it out of kale. Yes.
No fucking shit.
Yeah,
it was kale and cauliflower and they
merged
them together to create broccoli.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, technically, my God.
Kale and all those things are all forms of cabbage or something like that. They're like all the same variant, just like mixed with other things. And that's what, yeah, that's how they
Science
got broccoli.
Science is amazing, y'all.
But so those, that money funded that family who ended up producing all of Ian Fleming's work. So they did all of the, they still have their name on every James Bond film. And
the broccoli estate.
The broccolis. And
Chitty Chitty,
chitty,
bang,
chitty
bang
Bang. Bang. Yeah. Thank you. The great
that
Ian Fleming.
Is my
property.
Favorite thing I've learned today.
Fucking rules.
You're welcome.
Thomas Kail also, but though we should say, directed the original off Broadway and Broadway productions of In the Heights and Hamilton.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And,
oh.
And he won the Tony Award for, yeah.
Well,
which
now
is why
I'm
I think the direction of this was, well, I get that. But I think the direction was on a higher par than the other ones we've seen. Not film, not TV-wise, but theater-wise. I did feel like this one was at a higher level than some of the others we've watched. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, certainly more than, yeah, certainly more than Peter Pan or Sound of Music, which were both look like badly shot sitcom soap opera things, and they didn't know what they were doing. This guy was, yeah, he was definitely like using the camera, letting the camera move dynamically with things, and yeah, I will go with that.
Mark Platt produced it.
Of Ben Platt fame.
Of Ben Platt fame. of one whose sperm created Ben Platt. Yeah, no, exactly. Mark Platt, who you see his name on fucking everything. I saw a movie, what did I see, like 3 nights ago that had his name on the end of it. I don't know, something. I was watching something, I was like, Jesus, another Mark fucking Platt movie. He's all over the place. But why don't we step through the cast?
Please.
Let's do that.
Let's start with our dear friend Aaron Tveit.
Tveit.
Tveit. Do y'all know him? Do you know his work? Are you Tveiter? Tveit heads? Tveitians?
No,
Tveitites?
I'm not especially interested Tveitiots? Now after seeing that. Boom!
Oh,
shit.
Damn, like, damn.
Well, I just, you know, this is the vibe I got from him. We all know these people. They're the good-looking kid. Somebody tells him, you're good looking, you should be an actor, or you can sing, oh, you should be a singer, you should be a, like a pop star. And I just got that vibe from him. He was so dead-eyed to me. Like, he was just so not present.
He's the one I feel like is a little bit, he feels like he's above it.
We also discussed that he was miscast. Like, he had
Danny
a good singing voice. He's a pretty boy. He shouldn't have been Danny Zuko. He's not moody. He's not edgy. He's not any of that stuff.
Well, I almost felt like it was on purpose in a weird way, because they kept adding little lines. Like, the book is just not the show at all. It was a whole new book, basically. And they would add little lines. Like, he'd be like, no, hey, Eugene, here's your book back. Sorry about those guys. And he'd be like, Zuko doesn't
do that.
He's a
nice guy.
But that happens in the show anyway. We see that. We see that he's actually a good dude. That he's with Sandy and with other things. Like, we don't need all those extra little I don't anyway. Maybe other people do in this day and age, but I just don't need it. And so it almost felt like, yeah, they were being like, let's get somebody who people like, who we're all going to love. But my opinion of Aaron Tveit, one, well, he looked 50 years old, which is its own thing. And that hair didn't help. But he's in the Les Mis movie, which we've discussed on this podcast, and we all agreed he passed. He did a good job.
Yeah.
He's Enjolras.
I mean, as good as anybody can do in Les Mis, but...
Correct. Yeah, well, sure. Okay. Yeah, if you're not... Yeah, yeah. If you don't like the material, you're not going to like him in it, that's for sure. But he...
Yeah.
Elevates that part. I mean, he does the best you can do in that role. And he's done a lot of TV. He did he was Roger in Rent at the Hollywood Bowl in 2010, which is how I first saw him.
Mm-hmm.
Was a pirated, you know, someone was passing around Rent at the Hollywood Bowl and we all watched it and I was like, who's this guy? He's fine. But then he did Next to Normal before that. Actually, Next to Normal was before that, but I didn't find Next to Normal till later. He's the son, original son in Next to Normal. That show, if you don't know it, motherfucking rules. Tom Kitt, Brian Yorkey. It's absolutely incredible. CJ, you would love Next to Normal.
You are the millionth person that told me I need
to
check it out.
Then you need to get on it.
because than I'm ranking.
You need to get role, on it.
That role is so for you, I can't even, like, I will spend a whole episode talking about it sometime. I can't even. I'm so, I can't even so much that I'm odd.
Right.
That's good. Yeah.
That was close, right?
Good dad joke.
Yeah.
You're officially cracking dad jokes.
I'm workshopping it.
That's good.
What was I talking about?
We were talking about Aaron.
Aaron Tveit. So
how we were nonplussed.
He gets his first Tony Award, by the way.
He's got multiple COVID.
No, he gets one. He gets his first and only two Tonys ago at the COVID Tonys. The ones that weren't, because nothing really went up. So he was the only person nominated for Best Actor for Moulin Rouge.
Oh, right. That's right.
And because he was the only person that could be nominated, he won.
I could see him play. We discussed this too. We could see him playing that role instead of Danny Zuko better.
For sure. He's a Ewan McGregor type. He's just not a Danny Zuko, in my opinion.
He's not a Danny Zuko.
He's a fail, in my opinion. I think he fails.
Agreed, fail.
I fail, yeah.
Not even a gentleman's fail.
No, he's a fail. He's on 11 episodes of Schmigadoon. I didn't know that.
No shit.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, let's talk about Sandy. Julianne Hough. What do y'all think?
I thought she was good.
I thought that the casting was really bad. I thought whoever the casting director was missed on both of these. These are actually very hard to cast. Danny and Sandy are really hard to cast because you want to start off with a Ken and Barbie kind of starting point, but then you have to add these layers and complexities to it. It's kind of like, you know, the good looking kids. I don't know why I'm picking on good looking people today, but the good looking kids in high school getting cast as Romeo and Juliet, and then the whole show sucks because they're not any good in those roles. Like, I just felt again that she was just kind of dead eyed and quiet. Now, some of that could have also been what we were talking about, that sound thing. Like, there seemed to lack vocal energy, but that wasn't really the case. It was because it was oddly mixed live. Yeah. But yeah, I thought she wasn't horrible by any stretch, and her dancing was quite good.
Yeah, she's a dancer. Ass off.
So she's a dancer. She's a good singer. I think she does a really great job singing the songs, but we've talked about her brother, Derek Hough, who was he was Corny Collins in Hairspray Live.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they together sort of came up. We also talked about he's an uncredited Hogwarts kid in the first Harry Potter. So is she. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're both little kids somewhere in that group of, you know, whatever, when they're getting sorted or whatever. The first movie she pops up in, though, is Burlesque. She's just one of the girls in Burlesque. And from then on starts doing a lot of TV. She does movies. She does Footloose, the remake. She's Ariel. She's the main girl in the Footloose.
Oh, right,
remake. Which, by the way, bad.
Bad. Oh, it's so bad.
So bad. 2011. 2012, she does Rock of Ages. I think she's the lead in that.
The movie. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I've only seen it once, but
yeah. And then Safe Haven and like other things that people really know. But she hasn't done anything like really massive in terms of film since Rock of Ages. This is kind of her big most recent kind of big thing. But she's at this point, I think, probably put a bid in to play this role, like a lot of people do for these. Yeah. She probably came to them and was like, my brother just did one. I want to do one. Can I play Sandy in Grease? And they went, great, let's do Grease next. Like, I almost even think it might have been built around her
in
some ways. I don't know that for sure, but yeah. She's fine. I think she's a fantastic dancer. I think it's really weird that they would add a whole, like, entire scene of her and Patty Simcox having a dance off,
cheerleading tryouts. Yeah, it was weird.
Where I'm like, I don't need this, but
it just stretched it out too.
I think it's fair to say later too that like those two leading characters were the people that I noticed the least. I was paying attention to other people's performances way more.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, agreed. I would say like a mild pass. I think she passes. I think she does fine.
She does better than Aaron.
I don't think her acting is like, you know, top of the line, but she's doing the gig. She's making that paper. And I can't fault her for that. Okay. Someone I think, well, we'll talk about it. Vanessa Hudgens, Betty Rizzo.
I know we discussed that it felt like she was doing a Stockard Channing impression the whole time. I thought her, the big number in the second act, I thought she kicked ass at that for sure.
Yes, she was definitely not bad. I think she's a talented actor and performer. But yeah, she was leaning into an impersonation, which isn't necessarily what the original character was. Like, just thinking about like one of the photos I've seen of the original and the Broadway cast before the movie, but Stockard Channing just fucking ate that part alive and stole it. So, you know, it's a hard thing to get over.
I've always had a really big crush on Stockard Channing's like eyes and eyebrows, like the way that she like can raise an eyebrow at you or like give you like a sexy look. Even in West Wing, she does to what's his nuts sometimes, and you're just Bartlett, right? It's Sheen, Martin Sheen, and she's just such a babe. Anyway, I'm really into Stockard Channing. If you can't tell,
she's so smart too. Like she can just see the twinkle in her eyes.
If I ever were to become a drag queen, my drag name would be Stockard Channing Tatum O'Neill.
Nice.
That's great.
Nice.
It's three names. Did you hear that? Channing Tatum in the middle. Okay.
Yeah.
Stockard Channing Tatum O'Neill. Don't steal it. Listeners.
Somebody just stole it.
They already stole it. There's already an Instagram. It's gone. I think she is. There's certain lines that she was just, she just was doing a bit of a Stockard impression. However, like you said, Siege, I think she nails Worst Things I Could Do. There are worse things I could do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, gave me all the feels, made me feel all the things I should feel in that. It didn't sound like Stockard. It sounded like a new version of it. She was bringing, you know, I just got chills thinking about it. She really brought something kind of new to that idea and an emotional side that Stockard's a little bit more still harsh in it. And I felt like, obviously this song is showing the other side of that she's not as harsh, but Vanessa really showed another side that I was with her. But yeah, there were just certain lines where I was like, you just sounded like Stockard right then. But all that to say, I think if more people had committed as hard as she did to the attitude, we would have seen some better acting. Because, like, Tveit was not in the same show she was in. And I think everybody should have been in her show a little bit more, personally.
Yeah, I like that.
Energy-wise, at least. She felt more committed, that's all. Everyone else felt a little bit apologetic.
Yeah.
That's just me. That's just
I'm with you.
Pass for me.
Pass. Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Pass.
We love Vanessa Hudgens on this podcast because we've talked about High School Musical, but also someday we should just watch Spring Breakers together because she rules in that.
She's so good in that. I dig that movie.
Oh,
so
God, that movie's
fucking
so
fun.
Fucking good. Okay. I'm a big Harmony Korine guy. So yeah. Kiki Palmer as Marty Maraschino.
Yeah.
I liked her.
Yeah.
I'm going to check her IMDb, but this might be the first time I ever saw her. And she is about to be one of our great actresses, in my opinion. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy at all.
Did you see Nope?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I told you I didn't sleep the whole night after I watched it.
That's right. She rules in Nope.
She's fucking great. I mean, everyone's pretty fucking great in that movie. So.
No, that's true. But she got a nomination for me.
Mm.
I thought she was incredible in Nope. But before that, she was a musician.
Mm.
Before all of this. She did some voiceover. She's in, like, the Ice Age movies and shit. She's Peaches in the Ice Age. I don't know.
I only really know the first two, and aren't there, like, 50 now?
Sure, yeah. Yes. She was on an episode of Family Guy in 2014, so that's a later one. You know, she was on an episode of Key and Peele. She did a ton of TV. She was on The Proud Family, the new one. She was on ER. Like, she's been around for a really long time. But she was a singer first. That's how most people knew her. And then she pivoted into more film. And now I think she's like kind of considered like one of the people to get. Like, she's,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She rules.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
in Lightyear most recently. She was one of the voices in Lightyear.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that leads. Yet, but yeah. I heard.
Yeah, I never saw it. Never saw it. Probably won't ever watch it. I love the Toy Story movies, but that doesn't look good, right?
Well, I think they should have stopped at the end of Toy Story 3, personally. When 4 came out, I was like, I thought they like died and went to hell at the end of 3
they
and
didn't,
came back.
But they didn't. Like, but I did. I agreed with you until I saw 4, and then I went, oh. Well,
oh, okay. Damn, well, yeah. Maybe I need to see 4. I'm being a hater.
It's just a really perfect sort of like
post-ending to the original ending.
Kind of, because really what it is like, if the third one is about us all growing up and like moving on from our toys, which is that's sort of what the third one is about, is like, okay, we're all adults now, we can leave Toy Story behind. The fourth one is like, cool, but now what happens to the toys? And it's sad and fucked up and weird, and Jordan Key and Peele are hilarious. Right.
I thought that was part of 3. They took them to the daycare. That's what happens to your toys. They're given away to somebody else. Like,
yes, it goes one step further.
I'll watch
because it.
It
goes into rogue toys. Toys who are no longer owned. What if toys had rights? What if toys... It's weird. It's a good...
They're in a landfill somewhere with a golf course over it.
Are they? Or...
I should have written
running
Toy Story
an underground 4. Mafia. That's the rule. Which is kind of where Toy Story 4 takes it.
I'll watch it.
You're gonna like it. And Keanu Reeves is in it. And you're okay. I love you guys. Thanks for doing a podcast with me.
Yeah.
You back.
Kiki Palmer passes for me. She's in the same show as Vanessa Hudgens, in my opinion. She's giving Marty. She's giving too much. She's chewing her bubblegum.
She's doing her own fucking thing, too.
Exactly. We stand a legend. Carly Rae Jepsen as Frenchie.
We talked about her a little bit already, but she's a pass for me. Good
that
performance.
Song doesn't do her any justice.
No, but the rest of it is great, and she's I was smitten.
Yeah,
was
and that smitten. That scene with Didi Khan was maybe one of the best scenes of the whole.
It was great.
Okay, Kanicki, Carlos Pena Vega, who. To me is not necessarily type wise, and I'm not talking about race, I'm not talking about any, I'm purely talking about like he just to me didn't ooze Kanicki. Like there just wasn't a lot of Kanicki happening in his performance.
Right. I'm kind
of I don't
with
remember
you.
His performance.
That's
so.
The thing.
Yeah,
it also
Jeff Conway is so he's
prevalent.
Eating
I think they took
furniture in that fucking movie.
Right. Oh yeah. But they also seem to take time away from it. I think all the added shit, the stretched out stuff.
We step away from him.
We step away. Mm-hmm. So he becomes this really distant secondary character. You know?
We lose some of the Kanicki Rizzo like vibe that we really love about the original in the movie. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's all there, but it felt, like you said, Scott, it felt a little trimmed, a little.
Yeah.
Too
neutered.
Quick.
It's
neutered.
Funny for a two-act musical that had all of this added material, needless material. It was just a little bit over 2 hours or something,
2 hours,
and it feels like it was
minutes.
Years.
Yeah.
It just felt long.
Yeah,
they added too much in the wrong places. They added fat in the wrong places.
There we go.
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah, and I can dig fat on a musical. You want to add some fat? Go for it. But they just chose the wrong.
I mean, it's a perfect
timed.
Length for a musical, she cried. It's a perfect length, but like, it just felt long because, too much unneeded garbage in there.
Yeah, agreed. He's a TV guy. He's all over TV, but I don't see him in any film or anything like that. And I think he might be LA local. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But he, I mean, he's familiar. I've seen him around.
I've seen him on
stuff. TV and shit. Okay. His birthday is also the day before mine. Mm. Oh. Except 1 year before. Okay. Oh, is he related to? No, he's not. Never mind. Oh. Okay. okay. Who's next? Jan. Kether Donahue as Jan.
Oh wait.
Brasha.
Oh, she was fine. I mean, I felt like she was kind of like just doing the movie character too. For a second I thought we were talking about Jan, the mechanic lady, as in Jan.
Oh,
Brady
Jan from Brady Bunch. We'll get to her in a second.
She was, I mean, yeah, she did the brescia, brescia, brescia. That's all I was waiting for with that character.
But that's not in the show. That's in the movie. That no, was a I know. Weird little Easter egg from the movie. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I liked it. I thought she was fine.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do with that character except sort of lean in and do it.
And fat shame the fuck out of her. Like, oh, I mean, yeah. That's oh, kind God, of what yeah. that character is there for, unfortunately.
Sure. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The other two, I mean, we can get into them, but the three T-Birds, Jordan Fisher, David Del Rio, and Andrew Call. As Duty, Putzy, and Sonny.
Jordan Fisher's voice was just like butter. His song that he sang was way too fucking long, but I didn't mind because he sounded so handsome.
Well, and two of you had a really good note that they should have taken. You should give him a call and they should edit it.
Dear manager of Grease Live.
He's singing Those Magic Changes, which is one of my favorite songs from the original show that is only in the movie as one of the things that Johnny Cascino sings at the at the dance. They just play it in the background. Those magic changes, my heart arranged. And then Zuko sings it kind of funny to San Diego. A melody. That part. Mm-hmm. We all know the moment in the movie. That's a reference to the original show. But then they put this song back in for this. I love this song. And it gives, you know, Duty an opportunity to sing. But what was I talking about?
It was interspersed with gym class.
Exactly. They kept going back and forth between that and the gym class. And it was just sort of like, wait, we don't.
I realized at the end why they did it is because he shows up with that letter sweater and they're like, where'd you get that from? And he's like, I lettered in track. And it's like, oh, that's why they had that in there. I don't think you fucking needed it.
Well, that's all in the movie. All the gym stuff is in the movie.
Is it?
Yeah, remember he wrestles the dude.
It's so much longer in this.
That's all right out of the movie. That was all movie reference. But those magic changes isn't in there. Mm-hmm. And it's like a kind of quick montage in the movie where he's just with the coach and the coach is like, okay, let's try this one, you know? And you're right. This one, because we're on TV and because we're doing live musical, I just don't like those scenes where we just like sit in the like, okay, now let's do this scene from the movie. I'm like, nah, keep it going. And I think they could have montaged all the gym stuff within Magic Changes rather than cutting to the scene, cutting back to him singing, cutting to the scene.
Because
we were just like, oh,
he sang a verse. Now here's a scene.
Let him sing
now
the song while we see the Zuko go through all the shit. That would have been so simple. One of you guys suggested that, and I was like, I agree. But his voice rules. But the other two, Putzy and Sonny, weren't in the right show for me. They were kind of poorly cast.
I don't even remember him.
I
mean that's the trick.
Jesse J and Boyz II Men both pass in my opinion.
Yes.
Dee Dee Khan and Barry Pearl both pass in my opinion. Barry Pearl specifically was the Stan Weaver, which is a character I don't think exists.
Mm-hmm.
Which is he's just somebody who is like introducing Vince Fontaine and all that kind
of Mario Lopez played himself a creep.
Mario Lopez did exactly what he was called to do and was creepy. And Anna Gasteyer as Principal Medea.
Oh, just delightful.
She was great.
She was great. She was having a good time. She was having a good time.
And she sang really well, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something you think of offhand for her.
No,
I would love to see her work more.
Yeah.
Well, she pops up now and then, and I think she has a show right now.
I think she's got an NBC show.
She's got some show right now, but I will always love her SNL. She's classic SNL to me. She and Sherry O'Terry and Molly Shannon and that whole crew.
Will Ferrell,
Sandler, well, the back end of Sandler, but yeah, that whole crew is like my favorite SNL time.
Do you have an actor name for the gal that played Blanche, her
Hanifa
secretary?
Wood.
Okay.
Hanifa Wood. She's absolutely incredible. I think
she's
maybe
fucking great.
The VIP of this film. Hot take?
Yeah, no. I sure.
sure.
Yeah, no, because she's just hilarious, and she and Gasteyer play so well off of each other.
She's so funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought she was fucking great. And it's I forgot, because it's been a while since I've seen the movie, that character was played by an old white woman, and she's really great in the movie. And then that actress and that character actually carries over into Grease 2. She is in Grease 2 as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That's right. And Didi Khan does too. I think those are the two that are in Grease 2.
Yes, correct. Mm,
that's right, that's right.
Frenchie's like a weird character in that. We haven't gotten into this, but there's a show on Paramount right now called The Rise of the Pink Ladies.
Oh,
yes.
And it also, I think, has some cameos. I haven't gotten through it, but I watched the pilot, and I've been kind of telling people to watch it. I rewatched the opening number to show to somebody a couple days ago, and I went, actually, no, this is bad. Why did I think this was good? I think it's just because the song Grease is the Word, that opening song, is a good fucking song.
Right.
Yeah. So I was sitting there like bopping to it, and the choreo was good, but it was paced really badly and the acting's really bad. But it's following Frenchie and Rizzo's older sisters as they're creating the Pink Ladies.
Oh.
So there's like a young Frenchie, and it's all kind of interesting, but it's a bad show. Nobody should watch it. I don't know why I've been telling people to watch it. And if you're one of those people, I'm very sorry. It's not great. Anyway, I think that's all we really need to talk about in terms of cast. They did a good job. It was fun. What else do we want to say? Is there anything else?
No, I was just thinking. I was like, I really got nothing. I didn't hate it. I do have to say, because I admire and love and respect you so much, Bailey.
Whoa.
You hyped it just a little bit too much. So I was a little disappointed after your hyping of it. In comparison to the others that we have watched, the other lives that we had watched. But I didn't hate it at all. And, you know, I mean, The Sound of Music's the best one that we've watched, and we'll rank all these. I know, I'm just fucking with you. But well, I won't rank it, but I liked it. I liked it more. I just thought it was weird. I think generally my take on it was, this is a weird, like you said, Frankenstein thing. And I think we're due for somebody, Bailey, go back and do the original again. And do a dirty, under the fingernails, raunchy.
If they fucking did it with Oklahoma, which I think is way less redeemable than Grease is. Do it with fucking Grease, please.
I'd love to do it. It's so cheap to put up. And I mean, well, the costumes and all that kind of stuff is what adds the price. But like, I know it's very cheap rights wise to put up, which is why a lot of community theaters and high schools put it up a lot. And you know, to be clear, I probably did hype this too much, but I've never said this was amazing. I just like it the best. I just think it's the best of all of them because of the Jesse J, the Boys to Men, the way it's sort of filmed and stuff. That's what excites me most about this one. But I don't like any of these. That's the weirdest part. It's all kind of stuff. I've put myself in a terrible place having to cover all of them.
I think the stunt casting in this is the least painful compared to some of the other ones.
Right. There's not an Ariana Grande.
Right. Yeah, somebody just out of place, because when you do that, and then you're so taken out of it and taken out of the time and place, and
there's no Christopher Walken Hook.
Right, exactly.
We discussed he should play Danny. They should have done it, and he should have played
Sandy.
Sandy. What if Chris Walken came out as like the fucking Dream Angel though, or something? You know, like I'd be like,
so we could watch him read his lyrics while singing.
Yeah, if I could do a Walken, I'd do it. But that's my one. It's the one thing I can't do. It's the one thing I can't do. I can do everything else.
Everything. Everything.
That you can name. No, I can't do Christopher Walken, and I don't have a great Australian accent. I got New Zealand. I got Kiwi.
Which I think Kiwi is way fucking harder than Australian.
You just have
I just
to have
need
a
to
phrase.
Sit down with the pages and then.
You gotta have a phrase for it. Yeah.
Ricka. Yeah.
For Australian.
Well, I'm a criminal defense lawyer.
Heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Yeah, that just went cockney for me.
Heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Rick,
thanks, Nicole.
They are. My name's MK. I'm a criminal defense lawyer.
That's my key.
Taika.
That's my Taika, yeah. Okay. Greece is the word. I love this show. I would love to put it up.
Yeah.
Oh God, I would absolutely love to put it up. Yeah. Well, I don't have a lot of money. So
join the club.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Find me someone who does and we'll do it.
Okay. What do we do?
I got a spotlight.
Do it.
LA Spotlight.
I just want to call out A New Brain has been recommended by Stage Raw, so I can't wait to go to that.
Nice.
By Celebration. But I looked up a new one. It's called Can I Touch It? Rogue Machine is doing it at the Matrix Theater through June 11th. It is also recommended by Stage Raw. And I just wanted to read the synopsis. Shay Solomon is many things, a business owner, a single mom, a community leader. But there's one thing she's definitely not, a pawn in Patron Bank's efforts to buy up foreclosed real estate in Roxbury and Dorchester in Boston. At the risk of losing her beauty supply store to the bank, she's caught between the personal fight for her family's livelihood and the systematic fight against gentrification. When pushed to her limit, Shay finds herself in the fantastical, peaceful place women of color have to recede into when they get asked stupid-ass questions.
Mm.
And Rogue Machine's doing it, so you know it's really fucking good. So that's going on.
What's it called?
It's called Can I Touch It?
Okay.
And I think she runs like a beauty care supply store specifically for black women. Nice. So I think it's about the hair thing.
Right on.
Is what I'm assuming. But it's running through June 11th. Rogue Machine, y'all. They always put up good stuff.
Sweet. The only thing I have is just Fringe. Go get your Fringe tickets. Fringe tickets are on sale. Get ready for the festival. It's coming up. We're going to be talking a lot about it. We're going to be on the ground covering it. But the Hollywood Fringe Festival is going to be huge.
Yeah, I'm excited for Fringe. I'm excited for CLA is coming up this summer as well.
Yes.
With Natalie Nicole Dressel as a play-in. And just a bunch of exciting things.
Yeah.
Do you guys, real quick, I think we actually should do this before, we should have done this before the LA Spotlight, and I apologize. Do you guys have any dream roles in Greece?
Dream roles. Other than what I've already played, no.
Okay.
Sonny Lattieri. I don't have, there's nothing else at this age that appeals to me that wouldn't be creepy to play.
You could play Mario Lopez's character.
I am Mario Lopez.
Grease isn't a show that I would say I have dream roles in, but I think if I got cast in it, the principal or the secretary are pretty fun roles.
Yeah.
Bitch.
What about you, babe?
You clearly want to direct it.
I just want to direct it. I just really want to put it back up someday. That'd be super fun. That's a good fucking show.
Yeah.
I like Grease. And Grease and Crybaby and Little Shop and Hairspray all kind of live in the same vein for me,
yes,
where like it's got to be a little raunchy and raw, and like if it's not, I'm kind of like, nah, I don't care.
Right.
Yeah,
that's too Disney
to be dirty
for me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Grease Live, guys. That was fun. Come on.
It was
fun.
I appreciate it.
It was great hanging with y'all.
We only have one
more
of these.
I say it every time. I always love doing this shit with you guys.
It is always fun. It's always fun. We only have one more left of these in this mini series, and that will be in like 5 weeks. We've got a while till that happens. But that will be the John Legend starring Jesus Christ Superstar.
Which I already know half my notes.
Goes back to NBC. That is NBC. And I think the most recent one that NBC has done, unless they did Annie,
it
that might have
came
been
out on Easter Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
And besides one casting point that I think will probably have contention for, well, you also don't like one of the other people. But,
I have two, yeah.
Right. But besides those things, I think we can all agree it's a really well-produced one. So it's good to go out on that one.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Also, it's a really good musical. I just love Jesus Christ.
Also, it's just Jesus Christ. We get to hear Jesus Christ Superstar.
We've talked a lot of Jesus Christ Superstar on this podcast.
Yeah.
Well, we covered Andrew and it's where he peaked.
Yes. At the beginning of his career.
Right. Joseph and then Jesus and then never again. Okay. Just kidding. We appreciate you guys. Thank you for joining us for Theater. This is not an stuff. This is a Bailey's pick. And we don't do stuffs anymore. It's kind of sad. I'm sad I don't get to say stuff anymore. We used to go stuff.
You can say it at the top of every episode if you want.
You're right. Theater and stuff should just be the name of our podcast. Join us next week for Scott's pick, which we still don't know. What is it, Scott?
No, we're doing... No, you're right. Never mind.
I thought we were doing...
Is it American Utopia?
American Utopia.
Oh, is it? Oh, you're right. It's American Utopia with Natalie Nicole Dressel and Jay Dutcher, who were on our episode maybe a month and a half ago, 6 weeks ago, something like that, where we discussed the Talking Heads concert Stop Making Sense.
Which changed my life.
Yeah. Changed CJ's life? Interesting. I'd love to hear how it did that. That's cool. And then we'll get into more stuff with American Utopia. We have not recorded that yet, right?
No, we have not. We just watched it together.
That's right. We watched it, but we didn't record it. Okay, cool. Yeah. And then after that, we'll be covering another playwright. Do you guys remember who it is?
Are we doing a Greek? Wait. What? I'm looking it up.
It is Martin McDonagh. No, it's not. It's actually not. It's Fringe. We do Fringe for a...
Jesus Christ.
We do Fringe for like a month and a half, like covering it and talking about it. And there's like some random... There's a CJ's pick in the middle. There's a Jesus Christ Superstars in there. Scott's pick. But then our next playwright is Larissa Fasthorse with Maddox.
Oh, I am excited about that.
Yeah, and we're going to have Maddox on for that, which is going to be awesome.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes. Do y'all have questions or comments? You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who wrote our theme song. And here's some truth. Our theme song is better than your theme song.
Badge.
Whoa. Coming at you. He also wrote all of our stingers, and they're better than your fucking stingers. Whoa. And he's a great guy. He's a great guy on top of all of that. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. She knows. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
Mm.
Or some sort of cocktail.
Maybe a Diet Coke.
White Claw.
White Claw and vodka.
You know that's like a white supremacy beverage?
White Claw? Because it has the word white in it?
Yes.
Sounds dumb.
Yes. I'm not saying like if you drink it, you're a white supremacist, but I'm saying white supremacists do enjoy White Claw quite a bit.
Well, of course they do.
That's the queerest thing I've ever heard, so they should keep going with that. I said that ironically to anybody who doesn't know us. I'm funny for saying that. I'm not offensive. I don't know. Can I decide that? I don't think I can. No. Subscribe, rate, review. We'll see you later. Bye. I've been cheated by you since I don't know when. Will I ever learn? I don't know how.
I just like
when I suddenly lose control. There's a fire within my soul. Just one look and I can hear a bell ring. One more something, something, something. Mamma mia. Here we go again.
Is this the Frenchie song they wrote?
Mama, how can I hang it?
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater. Hang out, Louie! Theater, theater. Theater.